Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 214 for August 22nd, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
People prior to actually tasting it raised the proverbial eyebrow at such a mix, but I can assure you that it turns out very nicely. I mean, in terms of a blend, it really worked.
That's Stuart Lang of Douglas Lang & Company. In the last episode, I mentioned the vatted malt Stuart and his brother Fred put together, a double-barrel blend of Laphroaig and Macallan malts. I thought it was unique enough to get Stuart on the phone for an explanation and details on the future bottlings in the double-barrel range. That's coming up in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. I haven't been ignoring the ongoing debate in Scotland over Diageo's plans to close the Kilmarnock bottling plant that's the home of Johnnie Walker, but other than arguing, there hasn't been much else going on until now. A rescue plan for the Kilmarnock plant and its 900 jobs commissioned by Scottish Enterprise concluded this week that it would cost Diageo more than $100 million to keep the plant open instead of moving bottling operations to a plant in Fife. And even if the plan works, as many as 350 people would still lose their jobs. The plan listed several options for keeping the plant open. Scottish government officials are reviewing it now following a summit meeting Wednesday between the government, local officials, and labor unions. Now, what's more valuable, a Black Beaumont or a 50-year-old Macallan? This week's whiskey auction at Bonhams in Edinburgh put the two up against each other. In fact, there were two bottles of Black Beaumont on the block. Bottle number 313 from the original 1994 lot of 2,000 bottles sold for £2,280, or about $3,800. Bottle number 1497 from the final edition bottling 2 years ago sold for £1,800, or just under $3,000. But a 50-year-old Macallan distilled in 1928 sold for £7,440, or just under $13,000. Now, a 40-year-old Beaumont distilled in 1955 sold for £4,320, about $7,100. Nearly 250 lots were up for auction this week, but one that didn't sell, a 60-year-old Mortlach single malt distilled in 1938 that was projected to fetch £6,500. Last weekend was the annual Whiskey Fringe Festival in Edinburgh, sponsored by Royal Mile Whiskies. Each year, the public gets to vote on a People's Choice Award called the Spirit of Whiskey Fringe 2009. This year's winner was the new PC8 single malt from Brooklady. It's the fourth and final release in the PC series. And at Brooklady, PC does not mean politically correct. It's the Port Charlotte series of heavily peated single malts. The 8-year-old malt has a peat level of 40 parts per million and was bottled at a whopping 60.5% ABV. No wonder it won the People's Choice Award. Also from Isla, we heard about the end of the Laphroaig 15-year-old single malt last fall from distillery manager John Campbell. It's being replaced by a new 18-year-old bottling that is now being rolled out this fall worldwide. There are still Laphroaig 15s on the shelf at many retailers. If you like it and you see some, you might want to stock up. There's an all-points bulletin out on the Isle of Arran for a runaway peacock. It usually lives at the Arran Distillery, and Managing Director Ewan Mitchell says it was the inspiration for the first in a new series of single malts from Arran.
Our distillery manager, James McTaggart, he selected 20 casks from our 1996 stock that he thought would marry together particularly well and make a very exciting new bottling. So in total, he selected 13 ex-bourbon barrels and 7 ex-sherry hogsheads, and it was bottled at 46% non-chill filtered, and it's very, very good.
Now, explain the reason for calling it the Peacock.
Well, the bottling is part of a new series we're doing called the Icons of Arran Distillery, and really, the aim of the series is to highlight, things which are really unique about Arran. We're trying to emphasize the fact that, you know, we are the only distillery on Arran itself. So we have this unique single status. So we're picking icons which, you know, really are specific to our distillery, and You know, there have been peacocks roaming the grounds of the distillery since we opened back in 1995. Although currently we're peacock-less, one of them is on the run. They've really become a symbol of the distillery. People are forever taking photographs of them as they're wandering around, and they've become, as I say, a real symbol of the place.
And you said one has gone on the run. That's sort of part of behind the campaign for this, right?
Yes, it's a peacock called Albert. His timing could not have been worse. Just as we said in the press release, just as the labels were being printed, he decided to make a bid for freedom. He decided he didn't fancy the publicity, so he's made a break for pastures new. And despite having a large scale hunt to bring him back, we haven't managed to find him. We believe he's currently still on the rampage in the village of Lochranza, where the distillery is located, and he's just being a general nuisance.
What else are you guys working on these days?
We're busy working away just now. We've just done another couple of single cask bottlings, which we've shipped out to the US. So that's they're on the water at the moment. So there's a couple of bourbon single casks, a couple of sherry single casks, which we'll be showcasing at the Mott Advocate Whiskey Fests in San Francisco and New York later this year. We've just, in effect, relaunched the Arran Malt 10 years old. We've put it in a very attractive new gift tube, but more importantly, we've also created a new vatting for it as well. So it just gives the 10-year-old a bit more depth, a bit more body and character. And that's already out in the market now, and it's really going down a storm. Beavering away in the background, we're working towards next summer will be the 15th anniversary of the distillery, which we can't quite believe it's come around that quickly, but the 29th of June 2010 will be the 15th anniversary of the very first distillation at the Arran Distillery. So we're planning a special day at the distillery to celebrate, and we've got one or two special bottlings up our sleeve, but we're not releasing too much information about those just now.
But I'm sure you will as time gets closer, right?
Oh yes, we'll be dropping information. We'll be teasing you, dropping bits and pieces out into the whiskey world, and building up towards it. But we'll look to next year as being a very significant year for Arran for all kinds of reasons. But first and foremost, because we're celebrating this landmark 15 years of the distillery.
Unfortunately, the Icons series won't be shipped to the U.S., but will be available in other global markets. I'll let you know when they track Albert down. The U.S. will be getting a limited edition of the Glenlivet Nadura, along with other selected markets. This special vintage was distilled in 1991 and will be bottled at 48% ABV. Now, what makes it unusual is that it was produced using the Triumph strain of barley, which hasn't been in widespread use by distilleries since the early 90s. Turning to bourbon, we don't usually hear a lot from the McLean & Kind division of Castle Brands, which produces the excellent Jefferson's Bourbon series, but Trey Zeller has come up with the first new release from Jefferson's in some time. He acquired 400 barrels of bourbon produced at the legendary Stitzel Weller Distillery in Louisville before it was mothballed in 1993. He's releasing the first batch of it this month as the 17-year-old Jefferson's Presidential Select Bourbon, and plans to release the rest next year as an 18-year-old bourbon. I hope to have a sample in time to give you tasting notes on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. And just in case you're wondering, the Stitzel Weller Distillery is owned by Diageo, which has no plans to put it back into production for now. As I've reported before, Diageo's Bullet Bourbon is distilled at Four Roses in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. From the What I'm Tasting This Week department now, got a whopper just in time to make the deadline for this episode, a pre-release sample of the new 25-year-old Rittenhouse Rye Single Barrel Whiskey from Heaven Hill. This one comes from the same batch used for the 21- and 23-year-old releases that have come out over the last couple of years to widespread acclaim, but this one will be the final release in that series. It's being bottled at 100 proof or 50% ABV and will sell for $190 a bottle when it's released this fall. The nose is amazingly spicy, with notes of cinnamon, oak, and vintage leather, and it just grabs hold of your senses. Now, I've never had the back of my throat tremble when tasting a whiskey before, and the Rittenhouse rye made my taste buds stand at attention. There's a little bit of black pepper, along with cinnamon, rich dark chocolate, and a little bit of dried apples and figs. I sometimes talk of whiskeys as having a lingering finish, but the Rittenhouse rye literally stayed in my mouth and throat for a full 5 minutes. That's more than lingering. That's a house guest of a finish. It's an amazing whiskey. I'm scoring it a 95. If I could only have one whiskey to drink for the rest of my life, this one would be right at the top of the list. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the Hardtack Cask Strength 12-Year-Old from Highland Park. It'll be sold primarily at the distillery and in the Scandinavian market. A sample arrived at the door this week, and it's everything I like about the regular Highland Park 12-Year-Old, only amped up. It's bottled at 58.1% ABV and is slightly smokier than the regular 12-Year-Old, but still has the citrusy tartness with a touch of orange peel. Highland Park doesn't have many cask-strength whiskeys in widespread release. I wish they'd make this one more widely available. I'm scoring it an 87. And as I say each week, these are just my impressions. You may find something completely different. By the way, if you've ever wanted to find out more about how tastings are done, Malt Advocate's John Hansel has started describing his tastings each afternoon on Twitter with a different whiskey each day. You can follow him on Twitter by searching for John Hansel, and you can follow me on Twitter. Just search for WhiskeyCast. Of course, there's a link at the WhiskeyCast website to make it easy. Now, a few weeks ago, I posed a question on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. I wanted to gauge your interest in whether you'd like to have a retailer offer special deals for WhiskeyCast listeners. The response was positive, and starting in September, New York's Park Avenue Liquor Shop will start offering you a special deal each week only here on WhiskeyCast. You won't be able to find it on Park Avenue's website, and I'm not even going to post the details on the WhiskeyCast website. The only way to find out about each week's special will be to listen to WhiskeyCast. I'll have more details over the next couple of weeks. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Auchentoshan holds its first festival at the distillery near Glasgow on August 29th. The Knob Creek Whiskey Professors will hold a live webcast on September 1st from the Jim Beam Distillery in Claremont, Kentucky. Vinopolis in London will host a Highland Park tasting with Jerry Tosh on September 7th. Maybe he'll bring some Hjarta along. The Whiskey Guild's annual dinner cruise and tasting is September 10th in New York City. Whiskey Live Glasgow is September 12th. And the Kentucky Bourbon Festival is September 15th through the 20th in Bardstown, Kentucky. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig, claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
Last time around, I mentioned the Lang brothers and their vatting of two casks from Laphroaig and McAllen in the first double barrel bottling from Douglas Lang. It was intriguing enough that I had to find out more, so I called Stuart Lang in Glasgow this week.
I don't believe what we are doing has been tried before. I may be wrong in that, but we haven't seen it, and it's certainly a novel idea from our point of view. Novel allied to we believe we can do it properly, and all of our tests and all of our testings and indeed our customers' reactions has been extremely positive.
Now the first batch was a Laphroaig McAllen mix, right?
As was the second batch.
And how did that come out?
Well, people prior to actually tasting it raised the proverbial eyebrow at such a mix, but I can assure you that it turns out very nicely. I mean, in terms of a blend, it really worked. And we're absolutely delighted. And the proof of the pudding is never the first order. The proof is always in the second order. And that's what we're getting.
Now, how did the peat in the Laphroaig match well against the classic McAllen notes with a little bit of the sherry, or did you use a fine oak barrel?
Indeed, and the honey sweetness of a McAllen as well. We're not saying here that it's necessarily a 50-50 split. It might be a 40-60 split, or it might be a 45-55 split. So one way or the other, and I will not go into the art of how we put it together, we have got a fine balance between the smokiness and between the sweetness and the sherry. The sweetness actually of the Macallan is stronger than the sherry, and the smokiness comes through very nicely. But it is a blend, and the nice thing is it's like a Portellan. It's a quite a complex little animal, because we have the sweetness in terms of Portellan, we've got the smokiness in terms of Portellan, we've got seaweed as well, the whole caboodle there. The reality of it is we've been able to transfer that into these two particular distilleries as a blend, and it's worked very nicely.
Now, I know you're trying some other experiments in this range as well, right?
We are indeed.
Including one that sounds just as intriguing almost in the same way, a Highland Park Beaumont mix, right?
Yes, indeed. And again, the beauty of this will be in the eyes of the beholder, if I can mix my metaphors. The Highland Park will actually come out a little more strongly than the Beaumont, but the marriage of the two is attractive. It's unique. I don't think it's been done before. And for those who like a seafaring, smoky, salty-ish malt whiskey, then this would be for them.
And one other interesting one that comes to mind, the mix that you guys are trying, is the Kalila Breval mix, because
yes,
we don't get much Breval anymore.
No, we don't. Braes of Glenlivet, as you will know, as it usually was referred to, it's a very nice sherry cask, and the sherry and the sweetness of the Breval goes rather nice with the Kalila. Because it's not an overly smoky Kalila. It's a mid-range one.
Do we get a better mix when you use some of these, some of the sherried Speyside and Highland malts compared to the non-sherried ones?
Well, that's a good question, and one that yet we have to determine, because whilst we've done a lot of testing on the ones that we have done, we have not yet done a lot of testing on the ones as such that will come in the future. So we're still working our way through various options to see what is going to work, because some of what we've tried literally has not worked. It's been a very poor show at the end of the day. The ones we have chosen are great, and the balance is correct as far as we are concerned, but there's actually quite a lot of work involved in making sure, for instance, Breval would not normally be one that would be considered. Our stocks allow us to do it, and again, hopefully you, the consumer, will be the judge as to our efforts.
Okay, so what didn't work?
Ah, that's not for me to tell you. Because there's nothing wrong with any of the whiskies that we have chosen in their single form, but to make a marriage, not every marriage sadly works, and this is the case not only in life, but in whiskey as well.
Now, the other one that you're trying is the Ardbeg and the Glenrothes mix.
That's
right.
Yes.
How did that one work? Because those are, the Glenrothes seems to me to be a little more delicate, and it almost seems like the Ardbeg would overpower it.
Well, yes, indeed, but I go back to what I said earlier, and that is basically the quantity of Ardbeg, and the particular Ardbeg from the particular wood that it has been matured in, and the Glenrothes has been a reasonably strong Glenrothes. We just can't pick a cask of Ardbeg and pick a cask of Glenrothes, stick them together and hope to have a result. The blending art, albeit with two different whiskies, is still an art, and it still has to be done properly to ensure that we have the right balance in all the flavors that we're looking for.
Go ahead.
All I was going to say is our name is on the bottle, and therefore our reputation is on the line. And you may be assured that we would not be putting any two together if we did not believe it had the quality to be of great interest and attraction to the consumer.
You're not going to be mixing anything with Loch Doo, are you?
Not to my knowledge, no. I can tell you that now, no.
Let's talk about Big Pete, because that's your other interesting one that's coming out. And what I like about this one is that it actually has some Port Ellen in it. And I know you guys have a lot of Port Ellen in your stocks.
We have some Port Ellen, yes.
It's unusual to see that in a vatting of any kind.
Yes, Douglas Lang have a reasonable reputation in the marketplace for innovation and for quality, and that's fine. But we must keep looking to see different ways to expand our little empire and develop our whiskies for the benefit of our customers and our clients. And one of the ones that we came up with was to actually name the ingredients, or most of the distilleries that were putting into a vatted, if I use the term, Isle of Malt. And our stocks of Port Ellen allow us to do it. Our stocks of Ardbeg allow us to do it. Our stocks of Beaumont allow us to do it. And there's a couple of other reasonable whiskies in there that, from Isla, of course, that we want to put in and that we have put in. And Big Pete actually bottles in a week's time. And so a launch will be coming in the month of September.
Now, I know you and Fred are celebrating the 60th anniversary of this year.
We
of
are.
The company. And there were some commemorative bottlings released this year as well that are being rolled out over the next few months, right?
Yes, indeed. There are a total of eight. Six total commemoratives, and at the end of it, there are going to be two special bottlings to commemorate the 60th anniversary, one chosen by Fred and the other chosen by myself.
Can you give us any hints yet?
Not a lot, no, but I think what we've already put out has been very well accepted. I have to say that both of the bottlings sold out within a couple of days of each other. And probably if we'd bottled more, which we're not going to, we could have sold the equivalent of four or five different casks worth of each, given the interest and the demand for those products. We're bottling one cask of each of some fairly attractive whiskies, Ardbegs. We have our Speyside's finest malt, 40 years old. We have, of course, a very nice Port Ellen, 30 years old. And we have some other attractive whiskies, which I can assure you will not let the side down when they're launched in September, October, and November.
And Fred gave me the chance to try some of that Speyside's finest back
in
January.
Aha!
And that's a very wonderful whiskey, and I know what distillery it comes from, but I'm not going to say it.
Well, good, because I'd be happy if you didn't say it. But I think most people would know that complaint.
Sure.
Indeed, no, I don't want my lawyers involved. The reality, of course, is we have an ongoing succession of 40, 41, 42, 43-year-old Speyside's finest, all of which are from the same source, and all of which have a wonderful reputation. But more importantly, they are all wonderful whiskies.
What else are you guys working on these days? Because I know part of the independent bottler's lot is to come up with something unique all the time.
Well, there's a limit. I mean, at the end of the day, a bottle is a bottle. And the quality of the whiskey is always predominant. And by far the larger part of what we do is making sure that our stocks are in order and that we've got as wide a range of whiskies that we've all tasted and chosen for possible onward sale to our customers. In terms of packaging and presentation, we have recently reinvented our old malt cask. We have reinvented our provenance, which is going very nicely, repackaged. We've brought out, or about to bring out, Big Pete. We have brought out Double Barrel. That's quite a lot for a small independent company to be doing in a 12-month window of opportunity. So, but we do not sit on our laurels, if we have any. What we do is we do keep looking and developing thoughts. Fred is the generator of most of the thoughts of what we do, and it seems to work quite nicely.
Gee, Fred said you were the one who came up with most of the ideas when I talked with him in January.
Well, you must have got him after a particularly pleasant lunch.
What's it like working with your brother on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I've had 45 years of experience of it. I think the question would be, what would it be like not working with your brother for 45 years? I've known him all my life for obvious reasons, and whilst it's not always a total agreement on everything that we do, we have an understanding that works very well for both of us. We both have our decision-making processes. We both have to agree on a change, which is not necessarily the case. If we don't agree on a change, then the status quo remains. But it's worked. It doesn't work for everybody. It wouldn't work for everybody, but it certainly works for us.
So you're glad your folks didn't trade him for Brook Lowdy Distillery back
then? Well, no, I didn't quite go that far. It'd been very nice of a Brook Lowdy Distillery, but no, that was 50 years ago now.
By the way, I also found out this week that both the Double Barrel bottlings and Big Pete will be available in the U.S. Douglas Lang's U.S. importer, Spirit Imports, plans to have them available starting in October. I've posted a link to its website at the WhiskeyCast website, so you can have your local retailer order some for you. By the way, you'll find links to all of the whiskeys mentioned in this episode, along with links for my Twitter feed and the Whiskey Cast Facebook page, the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the Whiskey Cast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And I'm still collecting questions for the next Q&A episode. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. If you have a question about whiskey, I'll try to find someone who can answer it for you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.